The podcast Campus Files is back with more stories of scandal, crime, and intrigue on college campuses.
It is not hard to destroy a college.
It's almost like a university under siege.
Listen to and follow Campus Files, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
So it's second and goal. Menungai to the end zone, and there's his first NFL touchdown.
This is really, really good. They time the motion up well right here. You can feel you get a block there, but the big one, watch Drew Dahlman, the center, pull out. You know, number one is center pulling, but number two down on the goal line. A lot of times when you're down on that goal line, guys are just firing straight ahead to get penetration in it, and it's hard if you're a puller when you leave that spot. So this offensive line is really starting to get into a groove with what Ben Johnson is teaching them in the run game.
Welcome back to the Football Postgame Show presented by TimberTech Decking and Railing and Aturo Tire. That is the Who's Hot and Who's Cold segment. We're going to give the Who's Hot to Kyle Menungai with his 13 carries for 81 yards. Obviously, DeAndre Swift was excellent in the game, but he won the award last week. Let's throw something to the rookie, the seventh-round pick, Kyle Menungai. He also caught a pass for 13 yards, so congratulations to him on his first NFL touchdown. We should let you know that that the Who's Hot and Who's Cold is sponsored by Plumbers 911. Plumbing emergency, call the professionals, available 24/7 at 1-833-PLUM-911. Who's Cold? This is a tough one, but we gave it to Caleb Williams. He was 15 of 26 for 172 yards, and he had an interception. No touchdowns, but an interception. And Olin, you pointed out how much his presence helped in the run game, but he wasn't as good as he has been, and he had four carries for minus 2 yards as well. Only sacked once, and he escaped a bunch, but he's the cold player after that game. That's kind of mean, but who had a bad game? Anybody better for the cold player?
No, I think it's a good pick. Yeah. I think we expect more out of the number one pick in the draft. Yeah. And we talked about having huge expectations for a guy like Caleb Williams. And I think he would agree that today he was cold and the pass game was a little off and wasn't taking advantage of some plays that were there. And obviously it's hard to see. We don't have the sideline view and you can't see the quarterback's view. But they did seem a little off there. And some of the throws were coming out really quick before the receivers hit their break. And some of them were amazing. Like when he hit DJ Moore. I forget what quarter that was, but DJ didn't even turn his head. When he turned his head, the ball was in his hand. Mm-hmm. So some of those plays are just seem like the offense was a little off today and just not the run game, right, with all the penalties. And I think even Coach Ben Johnson said it coming out of half to the sideline reporter that they had to get the pass game in a rhythm and they want more out of it.
Let's get to Randy. Randy is listening. We lost Randy. Let's listen. Let's take Don. Don is in Dallas. He's listening in football country. Hey, Don.
Hey. Hey, guys. Good win for the Bears. I think you all pretty much covered all my comments. I do agree that Caleb was cold today. I was expecting a few more yards passing, a better completion percentage, but a great win anyway.
Yeah, it was a great win for the Bears, no doubt about it. And let's get to Paul. He is in Buffalo Grove. Hey, Paul. Oh, we lost Paul. That's my fault. Mike's in Rockford. Hey, Mike. Oh, we lost him. Thurgood's on the south side. He's a great listener. He's got to be there. Hey, Thurgood.
Gentlemen, I'm here.
There you go.
Fantastic. Celebrating the Bear win, but to be a great team, a great organization, you must critique yourself. I pose the following question respectfully. How do you lead the league in sacks allowed last year, and failed to draft a left offensive tackle. I applaud the gentleman who has come in and performed well, but it's absurd that you would draft a tight end, Mr. Loveland, and at the 12th pick, you could have gotten Tyler Booker from Alabama, who played offensive guard and left tackle. Three, four other tackles were drafted in the first round. Kansas City got up. They're starting left offensive tackle Josh Simmons for some school called Ohio State. How did we have a guy, Braxton Jones, from not Utah State, someplace called South Utah State, out of the sixth round? And bizarre, again, just an observation, this team, the year before Fields gets there, we led the league in sacks. In the last two, 3 years, we've been toward the bottom of sacks allowed. And so how does Ryan Poles. Yeah. How does he ignore the offensive line? It's absurd on his face. So I'm prayerful. I have come out of the bunker. I'm watching Bear games again, but deeply, deeply, deeply disturbed by the evaluation and the of the management in terms of draft picks.
Thank you, Thurgood. I think you've been reading Olin's notes.
That's what I was going to say. Who was that?
No. When he went through the not Utah State, somewhere called. Pat, that sounded like a locker room joke.
Yes,
right?
Somebody was saying
in a locker room. Obviously, you guys know my thoughts on this, and I don't think any of us have buried our head in our sand and doesn't think that this problem is going to rear its head. Once again, as this season goes on, you just watch the film or you watch the tape from today and you can see some of it already, right, where the tackle is getting beat and, you know, they're going to have to give him help and figure out ways to kind of help and or hide that position, right? So it could be interesting, Pat. I don't know as the year goes on here, but they found a way to win four games and, you know, when it rears its head, you know, we'll talk about that again. And if I had to guess, it will. It will rear its head again, that that left tackle is kind of a glaring spot right now for the Chicago Bears.
Yeah, 100%. But also, will he get better? But, you know, I think his ceiling is pretty low. So you're going to have to deal with that, right? And I think you're seeing a lot of the boots to the right with Caleb. That's a free play that he doesn't really have to block anybody. So that's kind of scheming for him to help him throughout the game. I know as a left tackle, if I ever heard boot right, I was excited because all I had to do was run to the opposite sideline and influence the defensive end. So that's scheming up for him and helping him. And that is to Caleb's strength going rolling to the right. That helps him out. But maybe he gets better. But yeah, for sure, you want a better left tackle. Maybe that's next year. Maybe they fill that hole next year. But we'll see what the genius Ben Johnson does to help him out.
And it's interesting, right, because – as the NFL season goes on, I always thought the hardest thing was when you put yourself on film. And you put what you are on film, and you put your tendencies on film, and you put the way to beat you on film. And today, Chase Young, who's a big guy, right? Not the pass rusher everybody thought he was going to be coming out of a school called Ohio State, but the pass rusher, anyway, a very good, you know, big guy on the edge. And, you know, even last week, a few times with Frankie Louvelle, you know, Theo does let guys into his chest and he gets run back into the quarterback. He saw that today when Caleb had to scramble and spin out and do all those things. So, like you said, Pat, Coach Rochard would get film on him. They'll do a lot of work. Theo looks to me like a guy when I watch him that he is willing to improve. He's willing to work on what he needs to work on to keep his stance closed as long as he can so they can't get to his chest and not to turn too early and keep that foot pointing down the field and get back on a vertical line, all the things that they talk about in pass pro. But with our division and the guys we got coming, it's going to be a tough road. It's going to be tough on that tackle to get that job done, especially when he's on the road, say in Green Bay, in Minnesota. Wow. Those kind of games are going to be tough.
No doubt about it. We mentioned the genius that is Ben Johnson. How would you like to hear from him? We have his post-game comments. We can listen to that right now.
So in terms of injuries there, I think we had two guys that didn't make it out of that one, and that was Tyreek. He had a shoulder, and Cole had a back. So we'll see where they're at tomorrow. you know, I think this game really started and finished there with our defense. They just did a phenomenal job throughout. When you look at those critical numbers, it was 44 yards rushing. I saw 4 sacks and 4 turnovers, and I just thought, credit to Dennis Allen and his crew one more time. They're doing a great job getting us the ball on offense with great field position, and it certainly gives us a ton of momentum in games like that. And so they just did an awesome job. Offensively, the 200 yards rushing, I think both ball carriers ran physical, ran violent, but huge credit to our offensive line and the tight ends in that core blocking unit, because you could feel that line of scrimmage move at times, and our backs were finding the holes. So that was really the name of the game there. A lot that we can clean up and we can improve, that's always a good thing. We'll coach these guys hard, and we'll turn our page onto Baltimore soon after this. Open it up.
With the running game, how satisfying is it to have come out of the bye week with answers and found something there that's given some life?
Yeah, no, I think we've been pretty consistent with that message, that it was just going to take a little bit of time to get our O-line on the same page and feel good about their fits and their combinations, and I think that's starting to come together. You accumulate the reps over the course of camp and through these first 5 games going into the 6th one here, and I think you really see it start to come to life a little bit. So credit to them. I feel really good. They're really well coached. Dan Roshar, Kyle DeVan, they do phenomenal jobs, and they've been very consistent with that crew. It's a prideful group. Obviously, they want to protect the quarterback in the passing game, and they want to be able to run for 200 every week in the running game. So really proud of what that looked like today.
You had several red zone trips today that didn't result in touchdowns or field goals. What do you think was the problem that prevented you all from getting those 7 points instead of the
goal? We'll have to take a look at it. Hey, I can't tell you off the top of my head.
Coach, these turnovers, it's consistent. It's weekly now. It's not like just some once in a while type of thing. What do you most contribute to how the defense is taking the ball there?
Yeah, I think, they come in bunches. And these guys, we got a method in place of how we want to practice it. Dennis does a great job with instilling that confidence in those guys, putting them in the right spot. When the ball touches their hands, they're coming down with it. We really don't have many drops on that side of the ball. They're very conscious of it when it's a running play to try to punch at that ball and get it out. And so it's just really working for us right now. And really, our team needs it. I mean, it's really been the foundation of this last 4-game stretch for us.
Ben, Deshaun's takeaway seemed to be the spark early for you. What did you see both on the interception and then the return? And obviously, you're going to give
which one?
Deshaun's.
Yeah. Reception. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a great catch. And then we've really been emphasizing, because we've been getting all these, is how do we turn these into whether it's in scoring range or getting in the end zone ourselves on defense. And so all of our guys are taking a ton of pride in getting connected after an interception like that and looking to make key blocks so that we can extend that. I thought Shawnee hopped on up and was really, I thought he was going to go down once or twice, and he just kept on going. So we might have to give him the ball a little bit on offense as well.
And you talked about the discipline, the details, the things you want to play up, but striking that balance of doing that, what's your message to the team afterwards in terms of looking ahead and getting those things right?
Yeah, I think that's the benefit of when you win. You can usually coach a little bit harder. And so we're always truth tellers on Monday in particular. And when it's good, we'll tell them when it's good. When it's bad, we'll tell them what we got to clean up. And so there's a number of things there today that we can get better at.
You see a little reversion, following up to that question, in terms of some of the sloppiness overall?
Say it again.
Some of the sloppiness, did you see a little bit of reverting back to some of the issues that you guys...
No, I would say I was hopeful that game 6 we would play cleaner football than that.
Any sense of what happened on the 4th and goal? It was a missed exchange, but then it was a false start.
Yeah, they blew it dead, false start, so moved us back and ended up kicking.
You know what happened with Caleb and Drew there?
No.
Well, it was just the 2 drives for the defense wrapped around halftime that kind of let the things get away. How disappointing was that when you guys were dominating the game and looking to go into halftime?
Yeah, I put the before half on us offensively as much as is giving up that big play on defense. We had that 3 and out. We had control of possessing that ball before halftime, and we didn't do a good enough job. I think that's 2 weeks in a row there. We've had a three and out before halftime, something that we practice, something that we really stress, and we're not getting the job done there. So we put the defense in a bad spot. I thought we limited their explosives throughout that day, except for the one before halftime that resulted in points for them. So, and then, you know, out of halftime, I thought we had some chances, and we just couldn't stop them. But beyond those two drives, I thought the defense played some of the best ball we played all year.
You guys took the ball to start the game, so they got it back after the half. You guys have been getting out pretty early in these first quarters, and the Saints were struggling defensively in the first quarter coming into this game. Was that kind of the thinking? It didn't really play out that way. Was that the thinking when you took the ball?
No, it's weather-related. You know, it's a windy day, so I want to be able to control in the second half which way we're going.
How do you view the overall trajectory offensively through six games now?
Yeah, up and down. So that's what we've looked like. We haven't hit our stride yet offensively. We're capable of a lot more. We have very talented individuals. I feel strongly in our coaching staff. But we're not complementing our defense on a regular basis. With the number of turnovers we've had over the last four games, we should be able to turn those into more points.
What has to click? What are you seeing that if this clicks, it'll level out, it'll be a lot smoother?
Yeah, I think it's a lot of things. And so that's something we'll look at on the tape and see what we got to clean up. You know, we still have the false starts. You know, the good thing was the running game was working. The passing game wasn't nearly efficient enough for us here today.
And Dennis downplayed the significance of facing his former team today. But from your perspective, what's your appreciation for four turnovers, the defense doing what it did, and Dennis's unit being part of the win?
Yeah, I mean, he certainly led the charge there. We don't win that game if they don't play that well. They just did an outstanding job, and, you know, kind of felt it over the course of the week there with the two practices that we were able to get in that schematically he had some really good thoughts that we're going to put some stress there on the offense. And, you know, I thought the defense, they knew where to be. They knew what they were looking for, and it was huge.
Then before seeing the tape, how do you sense that Caleb played just from experience out there?
Yeah, hard to say off the cuff. You know, you just go off the numbers and we, like I said, we weren't efficient enough in the passing game. So we'll see why that was.
Go ahead, Jason. When you see him scrambling around quite a bit in the pocket, is that what you want him doing in those situations, those 10 to 12 second plays, or do you need something more decisive, quicker than that?
No, We design a play to work through the progression, and if he feels pressure, then that's when he looks to move on from there. And so, I'll go back, I'll look at that. I don't feel like we've had a ton of those up until today. I know we had maybe two or three more of those today than what I've normally felt. So we'll see what was the reason why and what can we do better. But, the broken down plays in general through six games, I don't think it's given us the yardage that we would like.
Had a pretty significant challenge that you won there. What was the process of, you know, getting to the point of dropping that flag?
Yeah, maybe we got a good replay booth upstairs, and so they're getting footage, and it looked really, really close. We felt like it was close enough to be forward from the couple of angles that we got. Really good communication on the headset with that, and the fact that their offense wasn't going super fast. It gave us plenty of time to make sure we were exhausting all avenues.
And we've talked about DeAndre in recent weeks. As a coach, how satisfying is it for you to see a guy like that be rewarded for kind of his head down effort that he gives you all the time?
Yeah, I think that's all of our guys. You just keep going back to work. When things go your way, you go back to work. When things are hard, you go back to work. That's really the answer for everything, and that's what we're going to continue to do as a team. But to your point, Swifty has done a great job here these last 2 weeks. We're at the point of the season now where no one feels 100% anymore, and that's what it's going to be the rest of the way. None of those guys feel great. Their bodies don't feel good, and yet you still show up and you find a way to be there for your teammate next to you, and Swifty certainly exemplifies that.
And was Grady Jarrett close today, or what went into that decision?
We'll see. You know, we got him back there in practice. That was, Friday, right? And so we'll see what it looks like next week in terms of his availability for next Sunday.
But why not today?
Because he wasn't ready.
All right, that is Ben Johnson in the post game. Good stuff from him. We will we'll comment upon it when we come back from the break. We know we have a lot of people waiting to check in, and we'll get to your phone calls, and we'll get a reaction to what Ben Johnson had to say when we return. You're listening to the Football Post Game Show presented by TimberTech Decking and Railing and Aturo Tire on the Score.
Welcome to Radio Rental. The scariest stories you've ever heard in your life. All told by real people. And off we go.
This wasn't a human being that I saw. There's something here in this house. Something not of this world.
There was a woman moving through the hall. I stepped back and I was completely alone.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Rattler gets away from Sweat. Directed traffic. Wants to throw downfield. He's got Shaheed out there, and instead it's intercepted by Kevin Byard. His fourth pick of the year. Spencer Rattler saw Rashid Shaheed running free, but he missed him. Byard there to secure it at the turnover for Chicago.
Welcome back to the Football Post Game Show presented by TimberTech Decking and Railing and Aturo Tire. And that indeed was one of the four takeaways for the Chicago Bears. And Kevin Byard, you know, earlier in the year you kind of worried a little bit that where was he at physically. Well, he's mentally strong, and to get four takeaways in this stretch is very impressive.
And he could have had another one.
Yep.
If Nation Wright didn't hit him. That would have been right in his chest.
Yeah.
Yep. I mean, he was there to make the play. So he's having an impressive year. He was a guy, Olin, as we get older, right? You wonder when that cliff happens. When you start falling off the cliff. And I thought maybe he was getting there, but not this year. He's playing pretty well through the first six games. I mean, with four takeaways, that's pretty great. But he's playing well back there and not showing too many signs of age.
No, and it's good when you surround him with young football players, right, like Brisker and Tyreek Stevenson and Nation Wright, where they can be the athletic ones and he can line guys up and point out good cues and tips and things that he sees. And that's the way when you get older, you raise the level of guys around you. I think where teams get in trouble is they ask those older guys to do the things they did in their sixth, seventh, eighth year. Well, as you get older, you start to lose a little athletic ability, have the other guys do that, but they can still provide value and make really smart football plays like he's made against, you know, the Raiders. Yep. They're robbing on Geno Smith and or the interception where he sees the quarterback point, sees the running the wide receiver turn and run, Shaheed, and he runs down there, knows exactly what that quarterback wants to do and intercepts the ball, right? I thought it was interesting, Pat, when Ben Johnson talked about we also want, when we get the ball on defense, to try and score, mm-hmm. right? I remember Alex and Briggs telling me that they always wanted to get to the numbers, right? Everyone got to the numbers. That was kind of the hole where all everybody would go to the numbers and run down the numbers there. So as they try to do that, Nation Wright looked like almost he was trying to get to the numbers and he got outside of it. But very interesting to hear him say, yes, we do want to score on offense, but also have our defense guys, when they intercept that ball or they get a fumble, get up and run that thing to the end zone, because I remember we used to run, score that damn ball, man, put that thing in the end zone, which, you know, Lovie and that defense was so good at.
Yeah, you know, it's a great point. And Mike Brown had back-to-back games mm-hmm. with interceptions that he scored on. And I just remember that the rule was always – you run down the sideline you're closest to, and his trick was always to go to the center of the field and then find his way back to where he could pick up his blocks.
He was an all-state running back in Arizona.
Tremendous.
I mean, that guy was all world. I mean, that guy was a different one, right? You let him do whatever he wants.
Yeah. And that was under the great Greg Blotch, right? That defense, they were very good also. But like we said, we've seen this story before in Chicago with the takeaways and the run game and the physical style of football that they're playing. But the thing that kind of that excites you a little bit is that your head coach is actually a play caller, right?
Yes.
He's actually an offensive guy who, you know, obviously we've seen that under Nagy and Fangio, but now you also have a quarterback who is, you know, he's dangerous. His arm is dangerous. He can roll around. He can't throw the ball. So as Ben Johnson said there in the postgame press conference, look, we're nowhere where we need to be. We're nowhere we want to be. And we're talking about in a pregame show how now you can coach guys harder after a win. And he said that, and he echoed what Pat said, that these takeaways come in bunches, right? And using the same words, but also like what he's saying is, look, we're going to coach them hard come Monday and get corrections. And you're going to need to. You're right with Baltimore and now the Bengals having Joe Flacco and Baltimore getting healthy after a bye week. And a lot of big games coming up, but you're going to need your quarterback and your pass offense to be more dynamic and get things out of them. But now guys are worried about your run game now, which is interesting going into these games.
And what I found, there was two things I found interesting in that press conference. And what you're talking about there is you can coach harder. And he said, we're truth tellers. I love that.
Yes.
I mean, it's true. I mean, you hear it from his assistant coaches. We talked about it in the pregame of how they seem like they all have the same message. He frees them up to be truth tellers, to just say what they're coaching, what they're seeing, not trying to sugarcoat it or hide it. And that must be exactly what they're telling the guys in the building. And that's how you set that standard. You let them know what's expected of them and just be a truth teller. I thought that's a great way to put it. Another thing that might slide underneath the radar there, guys, when he talked about why they took the ball first. It's because he wanted to be in control of the weather in the second half.
Right.
That is details. That is coaching right there. That's understanding these games come down to the fourth quarter, no matter if you're up 20-7 or whatever. Yeah, 20-7, or if you can be up 20-7 at the half, excuse me, that it comes down to the fourth quarters and you're in charge of which way you're going with the ball to win the game, whether it's a field goal or touchdown or whatever you need. That is impressive. To me, guys, I don't think a lot of head coaches think that way. I don't remember a lot of our head coaches thinking that way. I think we saw Marty Morningweg take that for the Detroit Lions and think it was going to work in overtime. But this is a full game saying, okay, it's going to come down to the fourth quarter, and me being with my offense, I'm going to be in control of the weather and what direction we're going to go in. I thought that was a slick answer and a pretty impressive thought and a way to go about the game and coaching.
And he gave his description of his process, too, in challenging, right? And we talk about being a truth teller and telling the players the truth. It seems like the coaches don't mind telling themselves the truth either, right? We had problems, I think, when they Noah Sewell punched, we thought, okay, the guy's knee was numb, but he punched the ball and he challenged it immediately, right? And so now maybe even his process has gotten a little better. And something that's really important about all that is, okay, you can be a truth teller, but it can't be your personal truth that makes you feel good about yourself, right? It has to be the real truth, what's actually on film. And it seems like, again, just in this early part of the year where they had two tough games and won four in a row, it seems like they are pinpointing what the real problems are, right? And we've gone after the statistics guys in the Bears building. Well, they've done a nice job too, right? And they got a leader now who organizes things, tells guys who their jobs are, and then, okay, we'll talk to these guys. And he even, you know, he probably didn't mean to. It's just the way he is. Took a shot at the Saints and said, look, they didn't want to rush the line of scrimmage, so we had all this time in the world to look at the play, right? And that's them on their side not doing what they're supposed to be doing. So learning from everything that they've gone through, if you go through those first two, three games and watch what the Bears are now, man, they've taken big jumps on stuff that they were supposed to improve on. They have improved on, which is pretty interesting to watch.
I also like the fact he pointed the finger at himself about the points before the half.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Saying offensively, we went 3-and-out. What's that? Two games in a row, and he knows the stats. Like, hey, that's my fault. I shouldn't be putting the defense back out there. And it's just refreshing to hear. It's refreshing to people taking you know, accountability for what they're doing. And it's also neat to hear him talk about Dennis Allen's defense, my offense, you know, but they're all together working together. And I'm also excited for one day when he gets to open up the press conference and deflect all the praise and accolades that they put up 50 points instead of having to talk about turnovers and Dennis Allen. But I do love how he does that, and he does deserve all the credit for that. But I'm also excited for a game where we talk about Ben Johnson scoring 42 points, 44 points or whatever, and it's all about him. But it's just nice to hear the way the communication is going back and forth between coaches to players all around that team right now.
He said specifically that they wouldn't have won the game without the defense. Mm-hmm. He said the defense played some of the best football they've played all year, and he said that that we haven't hit our stride yet, and we're not complimenting that defense. And that's true. Mm-hmm. They are not scoring as many points as that field position and that the takeaways and the domination would indicate they're capable of doing, right? They're getting the ball in plus positions and settling for a field goal. That's got to hurt him.
Yeah. There's no doubt about it. It's refreshing to
yeah.
It's just really refreshing to hear this. I mean, we haven't had this for a while for the last few head coaches. I know winning helps everything, but it is refreshing to be this honest and open, to understand that the process of what's going on, what needs to be worked on, and what's going well.
These combo blocks, man. The Chicago Bears O-line, they are running guys off the ball. It is fun to watch. And listen, as far as the defense goes, that first half, Molly, before those two drives, that's as good as I've seen in a long time, man. They were suffocating, in a word. They were suffocating the New Orleans Saints out there. They were getting after them. I don't know. I'd have to go back and look when Tyreek actually went out. I wonder if that coincides with when the defense started giving those big plays up. But, Ben Johnson is saying, like you're saying, Pat, and Molly, he's saying all the right things, right? He seems like he knows. And I think that the thing that I like the most is the things he says, and it doesn't mean we're always right either, but it seems like, yeah, that's common sense. What you guys got to get fixed. That is actually what's going on.
Yeah.
It's not like they say something on a podium. You're like, what the hell is he talking about? Like, that's not what's wrong with your team. You know, like that would happen before with former coaches. This staff doesn't seem that way. It's early in their run. And sometimes people get a little, crazy there up at Halas Hall, but it doesn't seem that way right now.
There's accountability. There is taking it on. Hey, we didn't do this. We got to do this better. There's an understanding of how you go about winning in the NFL, and when his group isn't doing it the way he wants, he's not afraid to admit it, and that's a reflection on him as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. It's not like everyone's saying this is what you guys aren't doing. It's like, no, we're not. Like, I'm way smarter than you guys, and that's not actually true. It's like, no, that's true. Like, what everyone's saying is wrong with the team. We're not scoring enough points on takeaways. We're getting a ton of takeaways. They do come in bunches. And everything he's saying is like, yeah, that's a really clear-eyed view on what you guys are.
Right. Yes. Right. And he said it. He said, the turnovers have been their foundation. Mm-hmm. And I guarantee you that's not what he wants the foundation to be. You know, he is an offensive head coach. He wants the foundation to be that offense where they're outscoring people and it don't have to really worry about turnovers or takeaways or whatever you want to call them. I would just think that's what he wants, but he's living off it right now, and we'll see how long these whatever more of bunches of turnovers is.
Right. And to your point, it's like, we all are wondering, nobody wants to say it, we all want to enjoy this 4-game run that we haven't seen since 2018 and just want to win football games and ignore everything with their hands over our eyes. But he's saying, look, man, I don't know if this can continue with the way we're playing without the takeaways. Mm-hmm. And Pat, I think you use the word refreshing. It is refreshing to hear him say that.
Yes.
Right? Because that's the same thing I'm wondering about when I'm watching film, right? How are you only winning by 1 point? How are we even in a game with all these takeaways versus the New Orleans Saints, right? So those are things that, and it's good to hear that they're looking at those too, because I tell you what, they fixed the run game and they fixed the run defense. So now I'm like, oh, maybe they'll fix other things too as we go along here.
Yep.
It's a great point. We've got a lot of people who are still waiting for us. We should get back to the phone lines. And I believe next up would be I'm going down the list here. It's Dave from Slinger, Wisconsin. Hey, Dave.
Hi.
Thanks for waiting.
How you doing? How you doing? I'm glad about this win today, but the only one thing we got to do is avoid injuries and hopefully that we can go a long ways. And the good news is the Vikings got beat.
Yeah, they did. They lost too. Yeah. It's interesting, Dave, you say that because he talked about everybody's hurt. I mean, he didn't have any problem admitting what everybody knows that follows the league. I mean, it is a vicious, tough sport. You come off the bye week, you win a game, you got a short week. I'm sure they have a lot of people that are really banged up right now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to come back and get onto the top on the NFC North. I really want to.
Yeah, I think the Bears would like to, too. That would be great.
And you got Green Bay losing right now 6-3 to Arizona, but I don't know if that will withhold, but you never know.
Take the NFC North and never give it back. There, I heard that somewhere.
There we go. It's starting.
Right? Yeah, it's starting, man. I mean, listen, it's been exciting to watch this team do this last 4 weeks, get better, go from the worst rush defense to you know, very, very good, stop the run, and then find a way to run the ball. And now, you know, hear a coach that just fixed those things, the coaching staff, right, fix those things, say, look, we got to be better in passing the ball. Yes. We got to be better on pass offense, and we got to also worry about when the turnovers aren't our foundation. So pretty excited to see this team keep moving forward, get healthy, get iced up, get some pain management in, right, iced up, hot tub, stretch out and get that back Kokomen, and let's keep this thing rolling.
Yep.
Let's try Jim. He's in Columbus. Hey, Jim.
Hey, guys. Just got through watching the game with the Columbus, Ohio Bears backers, and obviously we had a pretty good time today. And just wondering, you know, we talked a lot about Ben Johnson and what he's been able to do and the type of a coach he is. Now, I remember hearing Grody talking about, you know, in preseason training camp, stopping plays.
Right.
Getting on guys for not getting out of the huddle right and all that stuff. And, you know, so obviously he's got a plan. He knows what he wants, and he's particular about that. My question is, having coaches that are willing to show exactly that same sort of demand from the players, you guys have played. I mean, how difficult is it for a head coach to coach the coaches and hold them accountable so that these things are being done every day?
Thanks, Jim.
It's a great question, right? Yeah. Because we talk a lot about how important coaching is in the NFL. And to find really good coaches is hard. And to collect a staff is even harder and get those guys moving in the right direction. Have coaches, talk about players take coaching. My goodness. Have a coach take coaching. That is now when you're a head coach who does that. That's coaching, right? That is leading guys. And then, like he said, Dennis Allen has been a godsend. When I hear that, Molly and Pat, I think to myself, well, because maybe he doesn't have to coach him. Mm-hmm. He knows what it takes, and he's helping him coach his coaches. He's helping everybody move in the right direction because, Pat, I don't – you know, you had Dave Tobe. You had all these guys that very, very – we had, you know, Ron Rivera, very good football coach. Rob Marinelli, right? We could go down the list. Yep. Harry Hiestand, Ron Turner, we were winning. They just had a bunch of guys in that building and knew how to coach and knew how to win. And the things that this caller is talking about, a lot of people say, like, what the hell he's talking about? But he makes a great point, right, that coaches, he's getting on the coaches, teaching everybody headed in the right direction, and winning sets everybody on the right path, and everybody's like, okay, these things we're talking about here, they're working. Because let me tell you something, Mully, and I'm sure you know this because you were media too. The first people who leak out of a building when you start losing, the first people who jump off the ship, those are the coaches.
Mm-hmm. And Olin, back to the coaches of Harry Hiestand and Dave Tobe. They were young coaches when we had them, right? They weren't at the top of their game then. They knew that. They got better each week, and they were willing to point the finger at themselves and say, okay, I've got to get better. And you would see them work at it. And the next time they came with a game plan or a coaching point or whatever it was, they would have it right. And that's what coaches coaching each other and also coaches coaching themselves to understand how they've got to raise their level of coaching. And we saw it with two great ones there. Harry Hiestand, one of the greatest O-line coaches ever. Dave Tobe, one of the greatest special teams coaches ever. We were with them when we were younger, and they got better, and they were willing to admit when they made mistakes, and they worked their tail off to be better coaches to make us better.
And Olin, Tony Wise was in town this week. I got a chance to talk to Tony for a little bit, and I said to him, like, he and Dave helped you get paid. Like, it's one of the great achievements of their careers is not just all the Super Bowls in Dallas, but helping make you a wealthy man.
Can't thank them enough, man. I went out pregame in Miami. I said, I feel like I owe you guys dinner or something. Or some kind of owe you guys something for getting Jerry Angelo to move off his number. I remember being in negotiations with Jerry Angelo, and they paid R.W. McQuarters and Brian Robinson. May he rest in peace. And, you know, I was always yelling at Jerry, hey, man, get my contract. You're paying everybody else. And Jerry flatly said, I don't think anybody will pay a center that much. And My agent, Mark Bartelstein, and Rick Smith at Priority Sports in Chicago said, Olin, just wait. Somebody will. And I, you know, I doubted them, too. And when they called and told me what they Miami offered, I almost fainted myself. So I thought Jerry, you know, Jerry, I couldn't believe what they offered me to play center. But yes, those guys have they drafted me, got me paid in free agency. Those are two guys, and Tony Wise and Coach Watson have turned into actually really good friends now.
Yeah,
I remember.
And why wouldn't
also,
you like people who get you paid?
That's right.
Yeah, I remember years ago standing in the hallway, Olin, and you were walking out, and Cliff Stein, unfortunately, had come downstairs to get some lunch, and you tried to chase him back to this office to start working on your next contract. One of the funniest things I've ever seen.
I always wonder what they were doing, man, to work on my contract.
Go
we,
back.
We need a post game after dark where it's like, you know, a little, we can tell some other stories.
No, we don't.
My lips are sealed, man. My lips are sealed, Olin.
All right, we'll be right back for our final segment next. You're listening to the great post-game show from the wonderful presented by TimberTech Decking and Railing and Aturo Tire here on The Score.
Hey guys, this is Matt Norlander, co-host of the Eye on College Basketball podcast with Gary Parrish. We are part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, and college hoops is turning toward what's going to be a phenomenal March. So be sure you are tuned into the show. We're going to be publishing at least four shows every week. Follow and listen to Eye on College Basketball free on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. March is coming.
We're back with more of The Score's post-game show, presented by TimberTech Decking and Railing, number one in premium decking. Order free samples at TimberTech.com and by Aturo Tire, Chicago's hometown tire. Find a dealer at Aturo.com on Chicago's Sports Radio 670 The Score. Always live on the free Odyssey and iHeartRadio apps.
Welcome back to the football post-game show presented by TimberTech Decking and Railing and Aturo Tire. We are, of course, featuring the great Olin Krutz, perennial Pro Bowl player for the Bears, and Patrick Manley, longest-serving Bears player in history. 18 years, Pat? Is that what it was?
Sure. If anybody ever says over 16, I never correct them. So, yes, 18.
Okay. All right. That's a lot of years. I mean, that's a lot of time.
So I'm not going to correct you.
All right.
It was a long time.
It seems like a long time, especially, you know, being, you know, a guy earning over that length of time is probably pretty impressive.
Well, the way I put it, Mully, honestly, I participated in the games. Olin played in the games. So there's a different way to look at it.
Oh, let him fool you, Mully. He was always working hard, and he was playing ball. Trust me.
He was great. He was a great one. We know that. And Olin, you were maybe one of the greatest leaders in the history of that team. And
HOF.
You know, as much as we talk about, you know, Lovey and that whole thing, what a joy for him to have a guy like Urlacher on defense and a guy like yourself on offense sort of.
Molly, what do you mean, man? Are you dying?
No, I'm still with you. I'm not.
You're
going to
be with us next week, right?
What's going on here?
We need you next week.
Are you leaving? Are you leaving?
Goodbye, everybody. I will.
You're our leader.
Next Sunday, there we go again. You can join The Score and Circa Sports Illinois at Timothy O'Toole's Pub in Gurnee. You got Olin, you got Patrick, you got me, and our pregame show will be there from 9 to noon. Get there early. Then you have immediate reaction on the postgame show after after Chicago takes on Baltimore. That's next Sunday at Timothy O'Toole's in Gurnee, sponsored by Circus Sports Illinois, sports betting the way it should be. And I believe, guys, that Baltimore is on the bye this week. The Ravens having a very disappointing season. They've had a lot of injuries. They still have John Harbaugh is a hell of a football coach. He's done very well. It's really interesting that they're coming off a bye, and they're I believe in the midst of a four-game losing streak. So as much as you feel good about the Bears and the way things are going, hardly an easy game going to Baltimore and dealing with that group.
Yeah, and it looks like Lamar Jackson and Roquan Smith will be back is what they're saying right now. So that's their two leaders. You're talking about a leader on offense and a leader on defense. You've got a MVP quarterback and a Pro Bowl and an All-Pro linebacker coming yep. back. So that changes their entire outlook. You get 2 weeks off to get healthy, and you get those two guys healthy. That changes that team quite a bit.
Yeah, I think All-Pro left tackle Ronnie Stanley was in and out of the lineup too while they're on that losing streak. So you lose three All-Pros and your team will go downhill mm-hmm. a little bit. So if they're completely healthy, like you're saying, Molly, Coach John Harbaugh, of course, known to get teams on track, there'll be a tough challenge for Chicago Bears. But Chicago Bears continue to get better, man. I'm excited to see them go down there and compete.
Yep.
And we appreciate everyone still on hold that we didn't get to. You should know that Big Ant is doing the post-game show, and he will be on next. Anthony Heron will be on, and I'm sure he'll be taking your phone calls as well. Want to thank Tyler Farengol for his great work again today. It's really fun to have guys like Ray Diaz and Tyler doing the job, and great work from you guys. Really appreciate it. Makes it so much easier for us, and we will be we will be back next week, and we'll be celebrating the morning. I believe Olin will be on with us tomorrow. Patrick, mm-hmm. I think you're Tuesday. Is
Tuesday.
That right? So it's nice to
Tuesday.
Yeah, yeah. I will repay you on Tuesday Smith. For a hamburger. Yeah, Wimpy. Great stuff, and hang on for Big Ant. He'll be right with you. You are listening to the Football Postgame Show presented by Decking and Railing and Aturo Tire on the Score.
Hi, this is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst, certified financial planner, and the host of the Jill on Money podcast. With the new year upon us, there's no better time to take control of your financial life. And the Jill on Money podcast is here to help. It's your questions that make it possible for me to provide unconventional and I hope entertaining insights on your money, and more importantly, on your life. Follow and listen to Jill on Money wherever you get your podcasts.